Marco was ordered to Washington the following Thursday, and he left without ever having seen the inside of a building at Governor's Island. He was ordered to the Pentagon, where he was assigned to active duty in Army intelligence and promoted to major. Of the 9 men left from the patrol that had won Raymond the Medal of Honor, only 2 had nightmares with the same awful context. They were separated by many thousands of miles, and neither knew the other was suffering through the same nightmares, scene for scene, face for face, and shock for shock. The details of the nightmares and the rhythm of their recurrence were harrowing. Each man dreamed he was seated in a long line with the other men of the patrol on a stage behind Sergeant Shaw and an old Chinese, facing an audience of Soviet and Chinese officials and officers, and that they smiled and enjoyed themselves in a composed and gentling way, while Shaw strangled Ed Mavoli, then shot Bobby Lembeck through the head. A variation of that dream was the drill session dream, where they faced a blackboard while drill masters took them through an imaginary battle action until they had memorized all details assigned to them. The incomprehensible part of the nightmare was that the details of the battle action they were taught exactly matched the battle action that had won Shaw the Medal of Honor. There was more. One of these men had no course but to try to forget the nightmares as soon as they happened. The other man had no course but to try to remember the dreams while he was awake, because that was the kind of work he did. No other reason. Marco had been trained into wasteless usage of his highly developed memory. The first nightmare had come to him in bed with Miss Dover and Mrs. Diamantes. It had frightened him as he had never been frightened before. He had sat in that bathtub filled with cold water until daybreak, and if the humorous, noisy women had not been there, he would not have been able to face Raymond that morning. The dream started again with regularity after he got to Washington. When he dreamed the same terrifying dream every night for 9 nights and began to develop hand tremors at his work, it grew into an obsession with him, which he could not share with anyone else. The Soviet uniforms haunted him. Watching his friend kill 2 of his men in front of all of them every night, causing himself to become part of the technicolor print of the action, complete and edited, was like an attack upon his sanity. He could not tell anyone else about it until he felt he might understand any part of it so that people would have some reason to listen to him. Marco began to live with the incubus. Inside of it, when he was awake, it appeared inside of him when he was asleep. He would fight his way out, knowing he would be returned to it later because he could not stay out of sleep. And he made detailed written records of the section of the nightmare he had just left behind, and which waited to threaten him again. He gave up women, because what happened to him while he slept frightened them, and he was fearful that he would talk or shout, and that the word would go out that he was slightly shock simple. He must have been getting a little strange to give up women. Women were food to Marco, and drink and exciting music. The written notes grew voluminous, and after a while he transferred them all to a large loose-leaf notebook. They said things such as, where did the interpreter, Chun Jin, get a cigar? Why was he allowed to sit as an equal in a chair beside a Soviet general? Marco began to keep careful score as to how many times such things appeared in the dreams. What is that blackboard? He would note. 3 different colors of chalk. Why do the Chinese know in advance and in such detail about an action which will wipe out 1 full Chinese infantry company? Why are the men of the patrol being worked so hard to remember so many details and different sets of details? His conflict between the love and admiration and respect for Raymond, which Yun Lo had planted in his mind, and his detailed, precise notes on exactly how Raymond had strangled Mavoli and shot Lembeck, had him beginning to live in dread and horror that everything which he still believed was happening in his imagination might somehow, someday, be proved to have happened in life. Marco had no thought that these things had ever happened. The notes were to keep him from unhinging, to provide the tools of his daily work to hold down his sanity. The dream settled down to an occurrence of about 3 times a week in 1955, then began to step up inexorably in their appearances in 1956, until Marco was stumbling through his days on just about 3 hours sleep each night. He never knew, all during that time, that he had remained sane. In July 1956, at about 9:20 on a hot night for most New Yorkers, Raymond was reasonably cool as he sat before his opened French windows just inside the small balcony that was cleared by a strong breeze which had bowled down the Hudson River Valley. He was reading LeConte and Sundin's Unified French course, because he had decided he would like to work directly from the notes of Brillat-Savarin and Escoffier during his recreational cooking periods, a new interest that had come to him since the many pleasant evenings when he had assisted so many expert young women in making so many different kinds of spaghetti sauce. The telephone on the desk beside his chair rang. He picked it up. "Raymond Shaw, please." It was a pleasant male voice with an indefinite accent. "This is he. Why don't you pass the time by playing a little solitaire?" "Yes, sir." Raymond disconnected. He burrowed through the desk drawers until he found playing cards. He shuffled the cards carefully and began to play. The Queen of Diamonds did not show up until the third layout. The telephone rang again 40 minutes later, as Raymond was smoking and watching the Queen on top of the squared deck.
"Raymond?"
"Yes, sir."
"Can you see the Red Queen?"
"Yes, sir."
"Do you carry an accident insurance policy?"
"No, sir."
"Then tomorrow you will apply through the insurance department of your newspaper. Take all the standard benefits on a replacement income of $200 per week for total disability for as long as you have to be away from your job. Also take hospital insurance."
"The paper carries that for me, sir."
"Good. 1 week from next Saturday, on the 14th of July, you will report at 11:10 a.m. to the Timothy Swarden Sanitarium at 84 East 61st Street. We want you here for a checkup. Is it clear?"
"Yes, sir."
"Very good. Good night, Raymond."
"Good night, sir."
The connection was discontinued. Raymond went back to LeConte and Sundin. He drank a bottle of Coca-Cola. He went to bed at 11 o'clock after a sensible shower and slept dreamlessly. He breakfasted on figs and coffee, arrived at his desk at 9:45, and called the personnel department immediately and made the arrangements for the insurance, naming in the life clause his only friend, Ben Marco, as beneficiary of $50,000 if his death occurred by accident or by violence. Senator Iseland's office forwarded a personal letter addressed to Raymond, care of the senator, to the newspaper office in New York. It was postmarked Wainwright, Alaska. Raymond opened it warily and read,
"Dear Sarge, I had to say this or write this to somebody because I think I'm going nuts. I mean, I have to say it or write it to somebody who knows what I'm talking about, not just anybody, and you is my best friend in the Army, so here goes. Sarge, I'm in trouble. I'm afraid to go to sleep because I have terrible dreams. I don't know about you, but with me, dreams sometimes have sounds and colors. And these dreams have a way everything gets all speeded up, and it can scare you. I guess you must be wondering about me going chicken like this. The dream keeps coming back to me every time I try to go to sleep. I dream about all the guys on the patrol where you won the medal for saving us. And the dream has a lot of Chinese people in it, and a lot of big brass from the Russian army. Well, it is pretty rough. You have to take my word for that. There is a lot of all kind of things goes on in that dream, and I need to tell about it. If you should hear from anybody else on the patrol who writes you that they are having this kind of a dream, I will appreciate if you put them in touch with me. I live in Alaska now, and the address is on the envelope. I have a good plumbing business going for me here, and I'll be in good shape if these dreams don't take too much of the old zing out of me. Well, Sarge, I hope everything goes good with you, and that if you're ever around Wainwright, Alaska, you'll give me a holler. Good luck, kid. Your old corporal, Alan Melvin."
Raymond had himself reread one part of the letter, and he stared at that with distaste and disbelief. It offended him so that he read it and read it again. "You was my best friend in the Army." He tore the letter across, then in quarters, then again. When he could no longer tear it smaller, he dropped the pieces into the wastebasket beside his desk.